I'm speaking today with Joe Jaworski, a Democratic candidate for Senate District 11. Joe, first question, why are you running for this race?
Well, Charles, thanks for having me on here. I'm running for the race because at age 45, with a young family, my wife and I are very concerned about the way we see Texas going. This great state has benefited so many people in my generation, and now that we are parents of young children, our thoughts turn toward their generation, and we are alarmed at the direction we see the state having been going over the last, 10 to 20 years. Rather than task somebody else with doing something about it, I thought if I feel that way, I should run.
What previous experience do you have in elected office?
Charles, when we moved to Galveston, Texas, we became what you might call neighborhood activists in the historic district. And shortly after that, I was recruited, having done several things involving zoning disputes and all, I was recruited by the neighborhood to run for city council in Galveston. So I did that and was elected in 2000 and then reelected in 2002 and 2004. For three successive two-year terms. Now, that's the term limit. So in May 2006, as mayor pro tem of the city of Galveston, I term limited off.
Okay. You talk about the direction the state is going in. What, what do you see as being the direction we need to go in, and how do you want to get there?
My feel as to the course correction we need is to have a frank discussion as to what government is supposed to do. And in my view, government is to be an advocate for individuals and families, as opposed to for-profit corporate interests. You know, my experience, having been a lawyer now for 17 years, is for-profit business has a great environment and a great atmosphere. The government gives it corporate recognition. The government gives businesses a great judiciary, a judicial system, so they can resolve their disputes. There's obviously a very business-friendly environment here in Texas. But what of families and individuals? It seems to me that elected legislators have a duty to represent those people. So I'm concerned with the fact that Texas doesn't appear to invest in its human resources in a way that is inclined to benefit the next generation. And I think that we need to have legislators who, for example, will reverse the trend of basically privatizing public education, do something about the harmful and dirty air in our largest metropolitan area in Houston, which, by the way, the air in Brazoria, Harris, and Galveston County is just on epic proportion unhealthy levels. And those are the three counties in my Senate district. And we need to do something about transportation. You know, understanding that Texas is blessed with being a state that will have a continually growing population, what's our government doing to prepare for that?
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the environment, since you've made that already a theme of your campaign. And your opponent, the incumbent Senator Mike Jackson, introduced a bill this past session that would have forbade the city of Houston from taking action against polluters that were outside the city limits. This is something that Mayor Bill White had wanted to do. Tell me a little bit more about this.
Yeah. Well, what we have is a reality that even though the dirty air, the benzene, the pollutant leaves the smokestack at one location, it has an irritating tendency to waft to another location. And that's just reality. And, you know, whether it's coming from a car or coming from a smokestack, this stuff travels. And so Mayor White, understanding that nobody in these plants was going to do anything about it, and understanding that the legislature was not taking the leadership role that they should in enhancing the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality's oversight, and no one was passing any laws, he said, you know, look, what's a mayor to do? So he took well-founded nuisance law, which has been recognized in Texas for, you know, ever since we were a republic, and said, I will, as mayor of Houston, hold polluting refineries accountable for polluting within my city limits. That was met, shockingly, by a legislative proposal from a one Mike Jackson that I'm sure was written for him by certain interests, in which he would protect air pollution from a municipal nuisance lawsuit. So he was actually filing legislation to protect air pollution, for what it's worth. Obviously, I don't support that move, nor do I support burdening industry to the point where it's going to suffer. My view is that these refineries, with the price of oil being what it is, and the incredible need for energy and products being what they are, that they are perceived reasonably to be making a good profit these days. Look at BP, for example, which apparently has been able to pay out over $1 billion in settlements and still make a healthy profit. Seems to me that if the legislature were to pass rules that even Louisiana and California beat us on, and bring Texas into a more healthy role as a regulator of these industries, that they could make a healthy profit, the air would be cleaner, and guess what? Create jobs. Because retrofitting these plants is not just some punishment. It's a job creation policy. And so we can have cleaner air, more jobs, and everyone makes a nice profit and go on down the road. What that's going to take is a legislator who understands it's okay to pass rules that require these refineries to come up to modern standards, as opposed to siding with a for-profit mentality.
Now, some of the mayors of towns around Houston, where some of these plants are located and would be affected by what Mayor White is doing, they opposed what Mayor White was doing and would presumably were siding with Senator Jackson and his legislation to curb what Mayor White was doing. What would you say to them about this?
Well, I understand where they're coming from. Again, I was on a city council, and when you're on a city council, especially if you're a mayor, you're concerned about the tax base. You're concerned about major employers. There were time and again in Galveston that you know, Moody Foundation or UTMB or Anaco, our major employers, would be concerned about, you know, some ordinance or legislation, and they would let us know. So I understand the pressure that a local leader is under when a major tax base employer is against a particular law. But what I would say to the mayors of Pasadena and Deer Park is consider the fact that if the law is written well, that what it will do is not be too cumbersome. In fact, it will create tax base. Ideally, this would simply require plants to modernize and retrofit on a reasonable schedule. Part of their plants. That's going to mean the plant's going to be worth more and will generate more tax revenue. So I would ask the mayors to you know, work with the legislators to identify a way that's going to enhance these plants, creating more value in these plants, and therefore more tax revenue.
Beyond just this particular issue and this particular piece of legislation, what specifically would you like to see do, and what do you yourself plan to do in the Senate to help with environmental issues?
Well, I think as a concrete example, I would join a sort of clean air caucus, if you will, and look to leaders in the Texas Business for Clean Air lobby, for example. These are including Trammell Crow, Garrett Boone, and others up in Dallas, who understand that clean air, putting it in the frame of, you know, tree huggers and environmentalists who have no concern about the ramification on business, that's old. That's passé. What we understand is that, you know, businesses around the country and the world who may relocate to the Houston area have a choice. They can go to Houston or they can go to San Antonio. Well, they could go to California if they think the quality of life is better there. So we need to be concerned with making Houston an attractive environment, not just for families to live in, but for businesses to relocate to and flourish. So it really is a Chamber of Commerce issue to clean our air. Now, having said that, it seems to me the regulations that the legislature sets for the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality are where the rubber meets the road. So without telling you a mathematical or a scientific calculation, which, you know, is not my expertise, as a senator for District 11, I would be friendly toward reasonable laws that require some performance from these refineries and to help them, frankly, get what they need to modernize their equipment. So Louisiana has better laws than we do on this. California surely does. And we would simply look at their examples. And some of these bills have been defeated in the last session, so they're already written down.
Okay. You talked about transportation. Tell me more about what you have in mind.
You know, we're at a time now in Houston where more roads are being built, and the ones that have been built are being improved. But what that really means is more traffic jams. I would like to see a seismic shift and an opportunity taken. And what I mean is, from my town where I live now in Galveston, Texas, to downtown Houston, is a corridor that is underway. That I-45 Southeast corridor from downtown Houston to Clear Lake to Galveston presents an incredible opportunity for inner-city rail. And I would like to see the example made along that corridor servicing that entire Southeast community, you know, from University of Houston to the Friendswood, Clear Lake area, down to Dickinson, and all the way down to the Railroad Museum in Galveston as an opportunity in Texas to build, you know, in the 21st century, a first-class rail commuter option. That's what I'm talking about. Now, on a larger level, somebody needs to address the fact that rail subsidies need to be brought into Texas.
Okay. So how can the legislature help with that?
Well, I think that the legislature can certainly send a message, even if it's just a resolution, to our congressional delegation. Because let's face it, most of this ought to be paid for at our current tax rate by a, you know, gas tax reallocation. Instead of it going just toward roads, let's put some toward rail. But I think also there's going to have to be some districts that a legislature might recognize and rededicate some tax money that goes toward TxDOT toward a rail option.
Okay. Now, you are an attorney. What kind of law have you practiced?
It's civil trial law. And so in 1991, I graduated from law school and I clerked for a federal judge by the name of John R. Brown, who was a famous civil rights judge and maritime law judge. So my specific specialty, Charles, has been maritime and admiralty law. And I've represented both corporations and drilling interests and individuals.
Okay. How do you see that as being, you know, a good experience for you in the legislature? How will that help you be a better legislator?
Well, I mean, number one, certainly having been an advocate in court for 17 years, you know, I can stand on my feet and argue a position and react reasonably to information that other people have. And more importantly, I think it allows me to be a better service provider to my constituents because, Charles, since 1998, I have represented individuals, families who have been injured or defrauded or have suffered some loss of some kind, and they don't know how to address it. And so they come to me needing help to navigate the judiciary. Well, I look at that as incredibly similar to, you know, a constituent who feels completely disassociated and disconnected from their government, and they need their senator to hold some hope before them that they can navigate the legislative process or the government process. So in as much as I've been an advocate and a service provider to my legal clients, I think those skills transfer beautifully to a legislative setting.
How would you say you and your clients have been affected by recent movements in Texas towards what's known as tort reform?
You know, in the admiralty field, which is typically federal law in federal courts, untouched. You know, we're used to going before a judge, not a jury. We're used to having punitive damages not even in the picture because they're forbidden. We're used to reasonable economic-based recovery rather than far-out pain and suffering damages. So, you know, the admiralty law has been around for longer than the state of Texas. And that's, I think, why, you know, that sort of practice has not been as affected. Certainly I've had a lot of experience with, you know, Texas tort law. And, you know, my comment is that most clients of most injury practice have been negatively affected. And you're just now seeing, for example, people who have suffered loss having a pretty horrendous reality check with their lawyers when they check in and say, well, you know, so-and-so got hurt, can you represent us? And then the lawyer says, you know, under the law, it's just not worth your time. And people are now reeling from that. What I would say is, you know, the tort reform movement has been very successful over the last several years because of, I think, some temporary political realities. Here's the thing, Charles. You know what? You want real tort reform, you put that, believe it or not, lawyers are the first level of tort reform. There is no lawyer I know practicing in the personal injury field that will take a loser case. It's just antithetical to their ability to make a living. So why would you do that? Secondly, judges are a great second layer of tort reform. Judges can bounce a case if it's frivolous. Judges can award sanctions against a lawyer who continues to file frivolous lawsuits. Judges can stop litigants who file frivolous lawsuits from doing it again. And then finally, number three, if people are good enough to vote, then people are good enough to serve on juries. And so the third layer of tort reform is the jury system, which, you know, goes back hundreds and hundreds of years, and I have ultimate faith in. I don't know that we need any more statutes taking that discretion away from lawyers who are professionals, judges who are sworn to uphold the law, and juries who, frankly, are the true test of what Texas justice is.
You have an opponent in the Democratic primary for Senate District 11. Why should people vote for you in March?
Charles, I think that number one, I have a maturity and a proven track record of achieving results. In other words, if you're looking for someone who has had some beginning experience in representing people, well, I've had 3 years on a city council, and term limited off, you know, intact. Number two, I have a family, and family can be defined in many ways in today's modern world, but what I mean to say is I have an investment, and I am daily watching the next generation wake up in my home and members of the next generation. And I think that has some investment toward making sure we get it right. And then number three, I have a passion for it. And I have a family history of it. And so deep down inside of me, I feel like there is a real need personally for me to get involved. And I think that, you know, anyone who wants to compare me to my opponent in the primary ought to ask the opponent, well, you know, why are you making this sacrifice? To me, this is all about keeping Texas great and making sure that we reverse and stop dead in its tracks this attack on government, representative government, because that's what I see happening.
All right. Joe Jaworski, thank you very much for taking time to talk to me today.
Charles, thanks a million.